A friend of mine was reminiscing recently about how in the early 90s, her sons, then 14 and 16, would sneak down to the living room after hours, making a bunch of ruckus because they were fascinated by the family's brand new acquisition, a computer. It reminded me of my own teen years, about 10 years earlier. I was 14, and we had what at that time was the cutting edge, right off the assembly line, first of its kind model of computer laptop. I remember how I was drawn to it and played with it. I was so curious about it. The neon orange glow of its little 4x4-inch square screen, the incredible logic of its simple commands, the 30-plus pounds of luggable computer power that I got a big kick out of toying with. That led me, though I wouldn't know it at the time, to a 20-plus year career tinkering with computers in various forms, with hardware at the start, pulling things apart and putting them back together in a Lego-esque way that made my inner 10-year-old sing. Then into computer systems administration, web programming, project management for software deployments. It's interesting to look back now and see all those different expressions of that initial core curiosity. It wasn't until much later, maybe not till last week actually, that I realized, looking back, that some part of me thought computers held answers to really big questions. That if you could just build the right software, people would do the right things. Or maybe I hoped if I could just develop the right program, it would help me do the right thing. Computers have this alluring way of making the just out of reach appear close enough to touch, of making the virtual appear real. But in practice, I found the answers, the big answers, the ones I really wanted, were always just out of reach. While the software I wrote did make things work better in the departments of the hospital where I worked, there were issues they just couldn't touch. Systemic issues, misunderstandings, power struggles, money challenges. And none of the software I've written or found to date gets me to do the right thing as much as I would like either. My planning software has not saved me from missing things that really matter to me. Even my step counter can't always get me to do what I should. I never would have said I was living the questions, but of course I was. We all do. We're all living the questions, big ones and little ones, every day. From our penchant for learning about other planets and other solar systems, to how we can learn to live together on this one. From our questions about whether zinc tablets really will prevent that oncoming cold, to the questions we have about how to stay well and live well in our everyday lives. From our questions about how we can help the children we love become the people they can be, to whether your neighbors really are going to buy that Harley Davidson the way they've been threatening, and more importantly, whether they will let you ride it. We may not even always be aware of whether we're really living big questions or little ones or how they connect to the threads of our lives. We just know we're drawn in by this or that and we want to explore and know more. I found it interesting in my own reading preparing for the theme this month that our capacity for this kind of lifelong curiosity is unique among mammals. Other animals might be innately curious while they are young, but humans have the capacity to stay curious our whole lives. That natural curiosity would lead us to explore, even if we didn't know why or what for, to simply explore and to try and to test and to learn for their own sake. We can't always predict, after all, what we're going to need to know in the future. So we look far and wide, and we store it for later. There's even a name for how we evolved this trait. It's called neoteny. Turns out it was helpful from an evolutionary standpoint for humans to keep a whole set of childlike characteristics through to adulthood. Things like our playfulness, our capacity to learn, our attachment to each other, and our curiosity. Part of what I find so interesting about this is that this set of traits was selected together. And I've noticed that these attitudes often do go hand in hand. When I'm feeling curious, I'm also often feeling playful and vice versa. And in that frame of mind, learning often seems easy. And some of the times I've felt closest to other people is when we play, explore, and learn together in a spirit of curiosity. It is a lovely package that nature has created for us. And curiosity is one doorway to that whole set, a doorway to that playful, learning, connected state of mind. We don't always experience life this way, however. I don't think I need to tell you. While we never lose it completely, there is a way our natural, childlike curiosity gets curtailed as we grow up. We absorb a whole host of messages about how we're supposed to be and think and what we're supposed to do. We don't even always notice the sight-limiting blinders we acquire over time. We don't even always notice the range of topics we have lost interest in, or the number of things we think we fully understand that we've ceased to question or wonder much about. By the time we are adults, we've learned a particular set of viewpoints from the people around us or experiences we've had, and we are frequently inclined to just stick with that. Our curiosity may be inherent, but often gets sidelined. We may never lose it, but it's not what it once was. And in our society these days, where the model is so often one of have an opinion, voice it with conviction, and then voice it again, and maybe again and again, in that environment, leading with curiosity, exploring questions, wondering if maybe we don't know as much as we think we do, this kind of attitude can feel out of step. But to be curious, genuinely curious, we have to let go of certainty. We have to let go of conviction, let go of the ways we've always perceived things or how others do things or the way things have just always been. And that takes courage. In her meditation called Open Eyes, Victoria Safford puts it this way. The awakened eye is a conscious eye, a willful eye, and brave, because to see things as they are, each in its own truth, will make you very vulnerable. That unself-conscious vulnerability, that openness that is characteristic of youth, it's part and parcel of being able to see without preconceived notions, to be able to be openly curious. To see in this way, Safford also writes, is an ethical act and intentional choice. To see with open eyes is a spiritual practice and thus a risk, for it can open you to ways of knowing the world and loving it that will lead you to inevitable consequences. Scott Taylor, author of The Spiritual Practices You Received in the Chimes newsletter this month, takes Safford's idea of curiosity and consequences in a direction that makes so much sense to me. I'm not sure I've ever thought of curiosity in terms of consequences, he writes, but I think Safford's got it right. There is a type of curiosity that leads to entertainment that mostly just fills our time. But there is also another type that leads to consequences, that leads to us being different. I picture a child with open eyes and how vulnerability and openness can make us accessible, touchable, changeable. I picture that unaffected, childlike curiosity that is honest about what's right here and where we are in it, in the midst of whatever is going on inside us or around us. There is this strange idea out there that once we've hit 20 or 30 or 50 or 80, that we stop growing, that we are who we are and who we will forever be. I would like to respectfully suggest that while our minds may tell us this because we've heard it over and over in our culture, that doesn't actually make it true. I believe we are primed, all of us, to reconnect with a childlike sensibility, to look around with fresh eyes, allow ourselves to encounter a consequence, and find the joy in living it. In that same piece on curiosity, Scott Taylor suggests picking a topic that intrigues you and following it until you encounter a consequence. The point being to go deep, keep exploring until the richness of the exploration changes you. For me, recently, in anticipation of the study leave I took last week, I was imagining the joy of just reading and learning and soaking up books and magazines that had been waiting for me, and of exploring around the neighborhood and slowing down and noticing things, and trying one of those spiritual practices on curiosity in the newsletter. The wisdom of kind eyes was the one that caught my eye. About self-awareness, inviting the wisdom of a trusted friend to tell me what they can see about me that I might not be able to see myself. Maybe you saw this one in the newsletter. It suggested asking someone close to you questions like, what makes me come alive? What scares me? What makes me a good friend? How happy am I? Do I fight fair? Interesting questions like that. I happened to be going to visit a friend last weekend who I've known for almost 20 years now. She knows me well, she is kind, and she was game. Turns out she did have a lot to say about one of the questions, and while I was hoping she would wax eloquent about whatever gift she might have thought I had or what made me such a great friend, turned out she had a lot to say instead about what scares me. Great. Thanks. Your fear leads you to try to do everything perfectly, she said. It was true. You want to do everything right. Also true. But your fear makes it harder to see you, she continued, harder to reach you. Your fear makes you try to be invulnerable. Yep, all true. Ironic that doing an exercise in service of an open and vulnerable curiosity, my friend picked up on all the ways I try to avoid it. She kind of knows how I think. If I just do this right, whatever this is, then everything will be okay. But of course, there's always a next this, and a next this, and a next. If I think about it, there is a way I really am still living the same questions I did when I was 14 or 20 or 35. How do I live well? How do I both address the right now, right here things like solving a computer problem or a workflow problem or a scheduling problem? How can I both attend to the things that could be done perfectly, that can be solved, things that when doing them feel like standing on safe and solid ground? How do I balance that with simply being willing to witness, allow things to unfold, to not know, and be curious? Maybe what my friend was saying was simply, I wish you could tell that there is room for you. Maybe there's more safety and room for you than you can tell. Or maybe that's my wish for you, for all of us. Life is challenging. Things get hard. We get anxious. We get frustrated. We get tense. How can we find that childlike place where I or we may stumble while we learn, but trust anyway in an unfolding future? Where we can know there will be things that are too big for each of us, but we don't have to fix them alone. Where we have every reason to be confident in the joy of this moment, where we can remember our playfulness, connect with the people around us, and have one heck of a blast of an adventure as we go. What, in this month of exploring our curiosity, might you encounter? What new way of seeing might you discover? What questions might you find yourself living with? And how might your explorations change you? We Unitarian Universalists are called to be persistent, courageous, and curious. We are called to live the questions, to sail the unknown seas within and outside ourselves, seeking and sometimes even finding the lands we seek. May we be patient while we sail. May we embrace the call of the consequences we encounter. May we be brave, and may we be vulnerable. As we bring open eyes to witness all that is yet unresolved, may we have the will to keep on sailing, connecting with our joyful, playful, childlike curiosity day by day. May it be so.